Hello, everyone, and welcome to another classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our co-host and physician-in-residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And Meg, today we're going to wind back the clock a little bit and enjoy the first part of a wonderful broadcast about fathers.
Well, Ryan, as you know, Father's Day is coming up this weekend.
That's right.
Which, by the way, you seem very excited about. And because of that, we're taking some time this week to encourage the dads in our audience. And as you mentioned earlier, this is a classic broadcast featuring our former co-host, Luann Crane. So let's pick up with your dad as he introduces Robert Wolgemuth on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, today we have a guest named Robert Wolgemuth, who will be a very familiar voice and name to many of our listeners. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I ever interviewed Robert and his lovely wife, Bobby, was in 1983. I think we met in 1980. And they were in the studio with us to discuss their fitness program, which was new at the time, and it was called Firm Believer, and it went on to become a classic.
I actually have the vinyl record of A Firm Believer. I still have that. I got to get them to sign it. That'd be even better.
It's worth thousands of dollars, I'm sure. Well, Robert and Bobby have been friends to our family for a long, long time, and he has gone on to work in the publishing industry, many aspects of it, including being an author for nearly 35 years. And one of the books that he wrote that I had an opportunity to interview him about was Daddy at Work, Loving Your Family, Loving Your Job, Being Your Best in Both Worlds. And he and Bobby have been married for over 40 years. They live in Central Florida, and they have two grown daughters and five grandchildren. So I think he has a thing or two to share with all of us about the importance of being a strong male figure in the home, known as a father.
Well, let's hear from him now. Here's Robert Wolgemuth on this Family Talk broadcast.
Of all the things that you could write about, why are you kind of focusing now in these last two books, three books actually, on fatherhood and specifically daddy?
Well, you encouraged me in probably in 1993. You started talking to me about writing something for dads raising daughters. So I'd never written a book before. I'm a businessman. I'm not an author. But you continued to give me a hard time about not writing, and so I decided to get you off my back and write a book. And the truth is, I loved it. It was a great experience to write this book. And it continues to do well. Month after month, I get letters from all around the world where dads have been helped by this unique understanding of this relationship between a dad and his daughter.
Now, Missy and Julie have grown up, and they're married, and they're out of the home, and not living in the same town that you do.
They both live
in
Charlotte.
What's that feel like to a guy who is totally dedicated to this responsibility of being a father?
That's the right thing. You parent in order to de-parent. You do what you need to do so that you're training them to not need you. Now, the interesting thing about that is that when they stop being your kids, they start being your friends. And in fact, the impetus for Daddy at Work came during the time that Julie, our younger daughter, worked for me. She was our CFO. She was a frugal spender and good with numbers from the time she was very little. And so she was in my office, and we had this conversation about being an employee and being a child at the same time. In fact, we were in the fax room, and she was doing some work, and I came over to her, and I said, I need a financial statement for last month this afternoon. And she said, I can't do it. And I said, well, I have to have it. And she said, Dad, I've had a big day too, and I can't do it till tomorrow. And so we stood there and looked at each other for a moment.
Like, which are we now?
And she said, I have a question for you. And I said, what? She said, was that disobedience or insubordination? So I went back to my office, and I stood there and scanned the books. I've got a lot of business books, and I've got a lot of fathering books. But I asked myself the question, is there a book that would help a guy learn to be the same guy in both places? In other words, the whole concept of cross-training. When a professional athlete is in his off-season, he doesn't just sit around and watch television. He's engaged in a sport, usually different than his primary sport, but a sport that helps him be better at that. For example, if you're a baseball player, even though you may love to snow ski, you don't do it in the off season because that sport doesn't help your baseball. But you may play racquetball or tennis. That does help hand-eye, keeping you in shape and so forth. So the whole idea behind the book was take your time at home to learn to be better at work. Take the skills that you're learning at home to be better in your job. Take the skills that you're learning in the job and take them home. Your family needs what you're learning at work, and your place of work needs what you're learning at home.
In fact, you make quite a point in this book. It's almost a theme or a sub-theme that the strategies that sometimes make a man successful in his work or a woman sometimes don't work at home because they are contradictory to what you're trying to do there. And you're trying to harmonize those two.
Yeah, I am. I'm saying forget balance. That's pretty radical concept. Forget balance. Forget the drive home, disengaging from what you've just experienced, and be the same person in both places. The truth is that it's in many ways a stereotype, an inaccurate stereotype of what you've just said. That is, the stuff that works at home isn't going to work at the office and vice versa. Let me give you an example. Measurability. That's a very common thing at work. I mean, if you're a salesman, you know by the 23rd of the month whether or not you're 50% of your goal toward the end of the month or 70% or 120%. You know that, and your supervisor knows that. And there's a sense, especially for men, of comfort having the scoreboard. They know how well they're doing. They know how much time they have to finish that particular task. Then you go home and it's just chaos. No measurability, no scoreboard. And so what I'm suggesting in the book is create measurability at home. Create accountability like you do at work. For example, at work it's very common to have a performance review. You sit down with your supervisor, they talk about how well you're doing, they talk about areas for improvement. And my encouragement to dads in Daddy at Work is sit down with your kids once a quarter and ask them the following question. As your dad, how am I doing? And then sit there and take notes. Listen carefully. Many kids would love to have their dads open that door for them. The truth is, we do kind of tell each other how we're doing, but we do it in subtle ways. We do it in ways, in some cases, that destroy relationships, that hurt people. So take time to create measurability at home. When you walk into a house where there are small kids and you see a chart on the refrigerator for tasks and stuff, that's a great thing because it takes a dad's propensity to measurability and his enjoyment of the scoreboard, the whole competition of that, and takes it home.
When I was talking about the contradiction, let me give you an example that we all know about, where the father is an absolute workaholic. He works 65 hours a week, maybe more, pours every energy into it, and succeeds by some standard. The business grows or he is promoted. Hard workers like that sometimes rise in business, but comes home absolutely too worn out to even talk and falls in front of the television set and doesn't even want to communicate. We've all seen that pattern. So you got a contradiction between a strategy that works at work and at home there is no strategy at all.
That's a more basic question than I deal with. In fact, I talk about that. My junior high wrestling coach used to say, you gotta have to wanna. What I would say is, in order for this book to be helpful, a dad has to truly want to be a better dad and truly want to be more successful at work. If you don't have that to start with, this is a waste of time. In other words, some guys have decided that their wife is going to raise the kids. And I know guys like this. Their wife is responsible to raise the kids, and he's going to provide for them by working hard. Unless a dad says, you know what, I need to be a better dad. I want to work hard at that as well as my work. This is going to be a waste of time. It sounds very obvious, but as life goes on day after day after day, you forget to do those kinds of very important things. In fact, really one of the things that I want to do when I write is to create ahas that are familiar. A stand-up comedian is funny because he brings real life situations into it, not bizarre off-the-wall things that would never happen. My whole idea is to write real stuff for real guys. I'm still not a writer. I see myself as sitting across the table from a guy like we are right here and saying, I have an idea. It's more like a visit to Luby's where you walk down the row and say, you know, I think that sounds good and that sounds
Everybody
good.
Knows what Lubies is. Lubies is a cafeteria in the South.
Right.
You have listed, I think, seven of those ahas in the book. Most of them are familiar territory. They're things we've talked about before. One of them is listening. To be good at work, you need to listen to your coworkers.
That's right. And the story I tell...
And at home, the same thing.
The story I tell that brought all this about was when Missy was three. She's now 28, so it was 25 years ago. I came in from work, and she was waiting for me. And she would take me by the hand and walk me over to the overstuffed chair in the corner. And we'd sit down, and she'd sit on my lap facing me, and we'd talk about the day. Well, when you're, you know, an aspiring young businessman, and you're in a conversation with a three-year-old, it's pretty easy to get distracted. And, you know, she's going on and on about her day. She loved to talk. And as she was talking to me, she could tell that I wasn't listening to her. And so she reached up, and she took my cheeks. She grabbed my cheeks with her fists. Not hard, but just took them. And she turned my face toward her, and she said, "Daddy, look at me when I'm talking to you." Well, there's a lesson that I needed to learn throughout my life. That's something that needs to apply to work. When you're in a business meeting and you're speaking to someone, you can tell if they're listening to you. Why? Because people don't listen with their ears, they listen with their eyes. People who are hearing impaired have taught us about how to listen. Forget your ears. Listen with your eyes and you'll get it. So there's something that Missy taught me at home, and I said, you know what, I'll bet that works at work. And it's been a great help to me throughout
my
whole
career. Do your coworkers grab you by the cheeks and
No,
say,
they don't. That's right. Oh. But when you're the boss, people don't have the courage usually to say, "Look at me when I'm talking to you." But you know, if they could give you a report card, they would say that.
My kids used to say when they knew I wasn't listening, "Earth to Dad, Earth to Dad."
Yeah, that's good. Oh, of course.
What about the buddy system? You talk about the buddy system in this book.
Yeah, that's really at the end of the book, and I think this is one of the most important and maybe not done things among men. I talk about going to camp as a counselor, and we actually were visiting a campsite, thinking about taking high school kids there. And the kids were in the water, and they were probably 6, 7, 8-year-old kids. And it looked like a trout farm at feeding time. It just froth, just water. And at a point, the lifeguard blew his whistle and hollered at the top of his lungs, "Buddies," do you know what this is? "Buddies." And all the kids stopped and started to scramble for their designated buddy. And when they found the person that is designated to be their buddy when they swim, they hold two hands aloft like a referee giving a boxer the victory. And as soon as the lifeguard saw that every kid had a buddy, then he blew the whistle and they started to play again. Well, life is like that. Life blows the whistle and says, "Buddies," and you're in the midst of this fray, the froth and the water. And there are times when you need to be able to pick up the phone and call someone who knows you well enough. A friend, not your wife, not your kids, not your parents, not your pastor, a friend who understands, who's a colleague of yours in some sense, where you hold your hands aloft and say, "I'm with you in this thing." And there are too many men that don't have that kind of friend to help them survive, help them keep from drowning in the milieu of life.
How tough is it for fathers, young fathers today, to do their jobs properly?
It's very tough. And again, I want daddy at work to be a relief. I don't want it to be one more list. You know how books do lists of one more, you know, thing after thing. I want it to be a relief where the guy says, "You know what? My new role as a father is something I can incorporate in the rest of my life. I mean, there are skills I already have." In fact, the opening story is a story about 1981 when Doc Heatherly, who's a good friend of yours and guy that
sure
you know
is.
And love for a long time, I was working for Doc at the time, and he called me into his office, and he offered me this huge promotion. I was 32 years old, and I was completely overwhelmed by this opportunity. So I said, "I need to talk to Bobby about it." I got in the car and drove home. We went for a walk in the neighborhood, and I said to Bobby, "I met with Doc this afternoon, and he asked me to take Paul's job." Paul Van Dynen had left to go to a different company. And I said, "You know what? I've only ever managed a secretary, and now I've got this huge division with people mostly older and more experienced than me. I said, the only thing I know about management is being a dad. I mean, we were both weeping. It's an overwhelming moment now as I recall it. And I had no idea how profound that was, that the experience of being a dad was a great training ground for being a manager. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's tough being a dad, but don't lie awake at night. You'd be surprised at how many skills you already have that can be applied to this new role that will work wonderfully.
But you have to be motivated to do it.
You have to wanna.
You know, you can allow this to become a burden to you. In fact, you talk about it in the book that we need to do it with a smile. We need to lighten up, as you said.
Yes.
How do you go about doing that? I mean, there are a lot of pressures on people today.
I would say that for every man listening right now, he needs to repeat the following words after me. I am boring. When our girls were small, they said that to me in so many words. And I realized that I had gotten equipped for a lot of things as I grew up and watched my parents and grandparents. But I did have a very special maternal grandfather who smiled all the time. When he walked, he whistled or he hummed. He was a farmer, and when he'd be in the fields or when he'd be in his workshop making something out of wood, he had the happiest countenance. But that wasn't me. I got my humor lineage came on my father's side, who's a stern German with heavy eyebrows, a great godly man, but not funny. So my kids were saying to me, Dad, lighten up. So I literally went to bookstores, and I stood there in front of the humor section, and I said, God, send me the stuff I can use with my kids. You know, not stuff that's just a waste of wood pulp. Riddles, humor stuff. And the truth is, a constant regimen of reading stuff that makes me laugh has changed that part of my life.
And unfortunately, many men today only want to succeed at business.
Yeah.
I mean, they really don't want it like that. And yet the things they do just are all encompassing.
Yeah.
It's so easy to fall into that.
Yeah.
Guys particularly are made that way. You know, our natural tendency is to pour ourselves totally into this work assignment and to forget the things that matter most. And if I have a single message for fathers today who are listening to us, is live your life the way you hope you will when you're in the last days of your life and looking back. I mean, that's the standard by which you measure what you're doing day by day.
This past winter, Ken Griffey Jr. signed a contract with the Cincinnati Reds. He wanted to leave Seattle, and Cincinnati is his home. And he had other opportunities to make more money. And he said, I want to be with my family. He said, I would rather be with my children than break the home run record. Now, that was on SportsCenter, and it went zooming past most people. I sat frozen in my chair saying, you know what? I mean, I think it's possible that what you've just described is changing a little at a time.
I do too.
Now we have role models like this, Ken Griffey Jr. and Michael Jordan, who are saying, you know what? It's all wood, hay, and stubble. They don't say that. But this will pass away. I will soon be able to not be able to hit a home run, but my kids will be my kids forever. And my investment in them is the most important thing I can. Well, when the average guy out there is watching this show and hearing that, I think that, along with what he hears you say, what he hears his pastor say, what he hears his wife say, begins to add up. And he begins to realize that when he's laying on his deathbed, he's probably not going to say, I wish I'd made 1% more profit at the company. I wish I had spent 1 more day at the office. And, you know, you and I have talked about this many times, Jim, about your dad and about those moments when you stand there. In fact, I think that had a lot to do with what you've decided to do with your life.
No question.
When you stood there.
No question about it.
And you saw those priorities lining up and you said, you know what? Anything else would be a waste of my time.
I walked out of Children's Hospital, USC School of Medicine, to start a little two-room office. I think I paid $200 a month to rent that little two-room space, and had no idea what was coming. But I felt like there was something more important than research and teaching and the other things that I was doing, and I've never regretted it.
As a father, I think those are words to live by as we end this Family Talk conversation with Robert Wolgemuth. We'll have more to come with Robert next time. And Dad, it's a perfect time to be speaking to, not just about dads.
Well, that's why I loved that interview, because Robert was making a number of points that will be useful to fathers in regard to how they relate to their children. And that must be said, that's extremely important, and it fits with Father's Day.
Sure.
But in a sense, there's another side of that coin that concerns me, and it is that fathers are often not honored on Father's Day. I mean, our message today has been to fathers, but what about to the rest of the family about fathers?
Sure.
You know, I remember Bill Cosby in one of his routines laughing about how families don't know what to do with Father's Day. And he would hear them whispering in the hall on the night before or the morning of Father's Day and trying to scramble and figure out some last-minute way to show respect for him because it's not something done in our culture. And I have to ask people, why? Why is it so difficult to think of dads in a positive, loving way? I think it is because the feminist movement built women or attempted to build women at the expense of men. And they have torn into them. And, you know, I wrote two chapters in my book, Bringing Up Boys. One of them was called Men Are Fools, and the second one was called Boys Are Fools Too. And if you just look at the sitcoms and you look at the commercials that are out there, they're all bad jokes on men. And I get tired of it. I get tired of it. And it affects the way we even feel about our own dads.
Oh, it does. I've talked with guys and girls at colleges when I go out and speak about how we relate to one another and how culture seeps into your feelings about that. And you watch sitcoms that make men fools over and over and over and over again. And at the point when your boyfriend or your husband does something dumb, which we all do at times, culture in the back of your head is going, see, he's just like them. And it's hacky. It's the lowest common denominator joke of look how dumb a dad is. Look how dumb the boyfriend is.
And it's the oldest one, too.
It is. It's boring. It's uncreative. It needs to change.
Doctor, I remember reading those two chapters that you're referring to, and I'm very aware as the woman in my house, when a commercial like that comes on, that it's up to me to point out, that's ridiculous. I don't like that commercial. Or just to reaffirm the men living in my house that that is not the way I see you.
And it influences the way the boys see their fathers and other men, but it also influences the way boys see themselves. They become adolescent fools, too. They mimic what they're seeing in those sitcoms, and we've got to oppose it.
Well, I just think of all the young women I hear out there going, where are all the good guys? Where are they? They're looking for them. They want to meet somebody like that. And I think society has just beat them down or taught them to be idiots.
Well, we're about to change that here, Doctor. We want to stand in affirmation and respect for all of those fathers listening right now.
And a good day to start it is Sunday, Father's Day.
You got 3 days to get ready for it.
Tell him you love him on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Men need love, too. That may surprise a lot of people, but it's true. And most men are earning a living for their families, providing for them, and protecting them and caring for them and helping to discipline and train and guide. Most men are pretty good men.
That's right. It makes me think of the program we did with Kim and Troy Meter about the average Joe.
Yeah.
Tell him you appreciate what he does. If you're giving him the respect and the accolades at home, he's not going to need it at work. If he's a workaholic and he's getting all of his praise and all of his kudos and all of his award things at work and he's getting none of it at home, there's a reason he's staying there all day. If you say, I appreciate what you do, I know you work hard and you're paying bills and I appreciate it, man, it makes me want to go home.
Well, what we're saying to the women who are out there and to their children, perhaps, don't wait till Saturday night to whisper in the halls about what you're going to do for Dad. Write him a card. Tell him that you love him. Provide his favorite meal. That's not a bad way to
Don't
celebrate.
Don't get him a tie or socks.
And bring the Lord into it too, because the idea of fathers was one of God's great ideas.
What a great point to end on today. It's so important for us to take time to honor fathers and give them the respect and appreciation they deserve. You've been listening to the first part of a classic program titled Being a Father at Work and at Home here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. If you'd like some ideas for how to celebrate your husband or dad this weekend, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, where you will find several resources that will help you honor and affirm your dad for Father's Day. You can also contact us by calling 877-732-6825.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and be sure to catch the conclusion of Being a Father at Work and at Home. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.